Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Marston's PLC conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, and I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Ralph Findlay. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sabina, and good afternoon, everybody. You've got me here, and you've got Andrew, Andrea as well. I'm afraid we've made Friday afternoon a bit busier for some of you, and I'm sure you can understand that concluding a transaction like this in a period of lockdown is not as straightforward as under normal circumstances. So if you've got the presentation in front of you, I'm going to start on page three with the summary of the transaction. This is our proposal for the creation of a joint venture between Marston's and Carlsberg. And the intent here is to place our beer business in Marston's and Carlsberg's entire UK business into a joint venture, so that what we've created is a long-term partnership between two great breweries with heritage and complementary brands to create a best-in-class brand-led U.K. brewer with increased scale, resources, and distribution. In putting this joint venture together, Marston's Beer Company is valued at £580 million, which is a 13 times multiple on 2019 EBITDA. Carlsberg's UK brewing business is valued at £200 million. As part of the structuring of the partnership, Marston's PLC will receive a cash payment of up to £273 million. We will own 40% of the partnership, and Carlsberg UK will own 60%, or Carlsberg will own 60% of the business. We are reporting cost synergies of around £24 million. So to be clear, that is an audited number, and we would expect to target more than that, and there will be further, at this point, unquantified revenue synergies targeted on top of that £24 million target. In terms of the impact on Marston's PLC cash flow, Andrew will describe later, you will see that the transaction is expected to be broadly neutral on a net operating cash flow basis once we take into account Marston's PLC shares of the dividends from the joint venture. Clearly, with the cash payment, this materially reduces Marston's debt and it increases financial flexibility. And of course, the transaction is subject to both shareholder approval and competition clearance. So if I move on to page four and a brief description of the two businesses that are forming the joint venture, Marston's Beer Company and Carlsberg. Last year we had turnover of £389 million, Carlsberg UK £414 million. We reported EBITDA of around £45 million and Carlsberg's adjusted EBITDA is £21 million. And just a point on that, I have sort of mentioned or raised a number of times the fact that relatively, Marston's Beer Company is a very profitable business within the UK beer sector, and I think that is illustrated and demonstrated by that point. In terms of market share, Marston's has just under 10% of the UK ale market. Carlsberg UK have just under 4% of that segment of the market. We have 1.5% share of the lager market. Carlsberg has nearly 13% share of the total lager market in the UK. So that goes to the point that I was making earlier on about complementary, not just complementary brands, but operating in complementary segments of the beer market. And you can see the brand portfolio that both we have and Carlsberg have. And I think you're familiar with the Marston's portfolio, which includes a range of owned brands such as Marston's Pedigree and Wainwright and Hobgoblin, but also a portfolio of licensed brands which includes Shipyard and Estrella Damm and a range of other world beers and international lagers. On Carlsberg's side, they obviously have the Carlsberg brands, but they also have the license for San Miguel in the UK. So from our point of view, a fantastic portfolio of brands. In terms of the scale of the business, Marston's has a capacity of just over 2 million hectolitres. We have six breweries within our business, and the strategy is really based all around local provenance, regional tastes, and a portfolio of brands, whereas Carlsberg, bigger capacity, brewery in Northampton principally, bigger scale and reach, not just in the UK, but globally, because they are an international business. So those are the financial and market share data. And just to reinforce the valuation point on the bottom of that slide, in putting together the structure of this transaction, the beer company is valued at up to £580 million and Carlsberg UK at £200 million. Turning the page to page five, what is the rationale and the reasons for doing this transaction? I think, you know, looking at Marston's Beer Company's developments in recent years, we have outperformed what in the UK is a weak market in the beer market. And I think what this partnership does is to create a stronger, more competitive UK brewer and able to continue the sort of growth trajectory that we've had in Marston's Beer Company in recent years. As I say, I think the brand portfolio is fantastically complementary. I think the scale point is important. There is increased capacity to invest in growth and to drive product innovation and fund marketing. We're also able to put together two very strong management teams, both from Carlsberg and Marston. And the equalization payments provides significant financial flexibility to Marston's PLC, so that is obviously important. That payment comes out of the fact that our business is valued at a higher rating and we're contributing a higher level of profit. An important part of this in terms of the future for the joint venture is really continuing to focus on dedication to service excellence and customer experience. This is what Marston's has been all about in recent years, and one of the reasons that Carlsberg has been attracted to Marston's Beer Company is what we bring in terms of our capacity to service customers and offer better customer experience than others in the market. So that is an important point. So why are we doing this? We see significant shareholder value creation through both synergies, productivity improvements, and also those synergies will, as I say, equate to $24 million on a reported basis, but as I make the point, we will be targeting a more ambitious number than that. Another final important point on that slide is that for Marston's, we retain an interest not just in brewing, but also in the upside of the joint venture through access to those synergies, so that's very important. On page six, we have put together with Carlsberg a detailed five-year business plan. That plan is to grow the business in beer and distribution ahead of the market. And the plan is thorough, it's detailed, it's broken down into what we're doing with our brands, where we're aiming to be on service, what our plans are for route to market, supply chain, and the people, culture, values, and so on, that we're aspiring to be as a partnership business. And we will be focused across the core beer categories, but also craft beers, specialty beers, and low-no-alcohol beers as well, in addition to operating at maximum cost efficiency. So in summary, that will be our strategy. Turning to the next page on the portfolio, I think a couple of key points I've just highlight here that I haven't mentioned already. I referred to the fact that in terms of ale market share and lager market share by business segment, these businesses are highly complementary. In total beer market share, we will have about 13.5% of the UK ale markets with those brands, and about 14.5% of the UK lager market. We are aiming to continue to grow in the craft segment with brands such as Shipyard, which comes from the Marston's portfolio, and Brooklyn, which is from the Carlsberg brand. A more competitive and, I think, best-in-class brand portfolio. Turning to page eight, I mentioned earlier on that I think one of the attractions of this partnership for both sides is the increased scale, and that covers marketing, it covers brand, it covers distribution. In terms of distribution and logistics expertise, we have really built a significant position in this in recent years. And I've discussed before the fact that we've now delivered to around about 11,000 customers in the on-trade. So we are very strong in the off-trade, and we're very strong in the on-trade, but we're bigger in the on-trade. Conversely, Carlsberg operated both of those sectors of the market, on-trade and off-trade, but they are a bigger player in the UK off-trade. So as well as talking about complementary nature of beer segments in terms of ale and lager, you've got a complementary fit in terms of on- and off-trade, on- and off-trade mix. In terms of scale, you can see from the chart at the bottom that the partnership has a significantly increased level of turnover ahead of the remaining major growth in the sector, and would be number four behind AB InBev in purely in terms of turnover, Bolton Coors and Heineken. So those are some of those points. So to summarise on the shareholder value creation point, as I say, we're targeting run rate joint venture cost synergies of around $24 million, and I do stress that is the reported number. That is expected to be achieved by the end of year three, and we expect one-off costs to achieve those synergies of around $32 million that will occur within the joint venture. Where those synergies will come from will be from a range of things, but including reduced overheads costs, looking at network efficiencies across the entire brewing and logistics network that those businesses have, and procurement synergies. I touched on it earlier, but we will be targeting material, as yet unquantified, revenue synergies through the increased distribution and product mix improvements that we see from this combination. We expect the transaction to be earnings enhancing from a Marston's PLC perspective in the second year post-completion, and would have been earnings enhancing in the first year had it not been for the exceptional costs incurred by the joint venture in achieving the synergies. On the equalization payment of up to $273 million, you should note that that includes $34 million of contingent deferred payment in order to, in total terms, help us to pay down debt. I'll come on to that nature of that deferred payment, which is part of the $273 million, later on in this presentation. So at that point, I'm going to hand over to Andrew Andrea.
Thanks, Ralph. Good afternoon, everyone. Sorry to interrupt your Friday afternoon. On turning to page 10, looking at the two businesses and really reiterating the point that Ralph has just made, that both businesses generate currently around £400 million of turnover. And on a standalone basis, Marston's Beer Company has about £44 million of EBITDA and Carlsberg UK 21. So we've got a business that is £800 million of turnover, £65 million of EBITDA pre-synergies. And from a net asset perspective, we're contributing around £200 million of net assets from Marston's, and about £140 million is coming through Carlsberg. Turning to page 11, and perhaps one of the most important points to note from this transaction is that from a cash flow perspective, this is a broadly neutral transaction overall. So if we look at 2019, our EBITDA of around £44 million, take off around £20 million of CapEx, including the proportion of central CapEx, which is principally IT, and apply an 18% tax rate to the earnings from BeerCo, that derives a net cash flow of around £18 million. And what we are targeting is a broadly similar level of cash flow from the cash flow-based dividend upstream from the JV, And that's before the larger synergy benefits come through in the out years. So effectively, we are receiving this upfront payment, but continue to receive a broadly similar level of cash henceforth. Turning to page 12, this transaction really does highlight something we've been flagging to the market for some time, that our brewing business is a valuable business. It's been valued at 13 times, and that reflects principally two things. First of all, the benefits of the value accretive acquisitions over the last dozen years or so. We've spent £110 million acquiring Ringwood, Refresh, Slate, and Charles Wells. But in addition, the recognition that this business combination itself does generate quite significant synergies, as Ralph has just described. And as such, the overall valuation of this business is £580 million. With regard to the impact on capital structure and what we're going to do with the cash, it's pretty simple. There are no special dividends. We are paying down the RCF, and we continue to be focused, ex-Mermaid, on our net debt target of £1.2 billion. What this does is clearly contribute to that, reducing the RCF, reducing overall net debt, and also reducing leverage. Clearly, COVID has had some impact on that, but we continue to be focused on pursuing a debt reduction strategy overall. And with regards to our debt itself on page 13, just to confirm, we've agreed and indeed finalised the £70 million additional bank facility that we highlighted a week or so ago out to November 2020. We've amended covenants in September 20 and March 2021. And that facility, together with the cost mitigation actions and the government support, enabled us to meet our financial obligations beyond the end of this financial year, excluding the benefits of this transaction. And with regards to our securitization, as we announced a couple of weeks ago, we are working with our bondholders, seeking technical waivers and amendments out to January 2021, reflecting the current impact on pub closure on our securitized income. And you will note that on announcement, about half of our shareholders had indicated that they intended to vote in favour of those proposals. So that's everything from me. I'll now hand back across to Ralph.
Thanks, Andrew. And page 14, I'd just like to go through a little bit more detail on the transaction structure, which I've referred to on the way through this presentation. So the transaction overall, just to repeat the point, really values Martin's beer business at up to £580 million, representing 30 times 29 EBITDA. Carlsberg beer business valued at £200 million. Marston's PLC will have 40% stake in the Carlsberg Marston's Beer Brewing Company, and it will receive a cash equalisation payment of up to £273 million. Carlsberg UK will receive 60% of Carlsberg Marston's Beer Company. On the equalisation payments, I mentioned earlier that £34 million will be deferred and is contingent. Now, a bit more detail on that. It will be deferred to 12 months from completion. That is the £34 million, to be clear, with the amount that's payable contingent on the share price performance of a pre-agreed basket of companies, which are named on that slide. They include companies which have significant representation or similarity to the UK on trade. In terms of the operation of the joint venture, the board of Carlsberg Marston's will include two Marston's board members and three from Carlsberg. The CEO of Marston's, who is me, will serve as non-exec chairman of the joint venture, and the current managing director of Carlsberg UK will be the CEO of the business. We've agreed as part of this transaction a long-term supply and distribution agreement by which Carlsberg Marston's will supply the retained Marston's pub business. And that, as a reminder, is an estate of around 1,400 pubs. In terms of other aspects of governance, the proposal is subject to the approval of our shareholders. And for completeness, there's a break fee of up to 1%. Of Marston's market capitalization payable if it doesn't get approved. And overall, again, on a governance point, the transaction further down the line is subject to customary deadlock and exit provisions for joint ventures at this site, so nothing unusual in all of that. On page 15, in brief on the pub strategy, this is really what Martin's PLC will be in terms of an operating business, a focused pub operator. Yes, we will have an investment in the brewing joint venture, but we won't be running it. We'll have that investment. We will be a focused pub operator, and the strategy for our pub business overall is consistent with what we talked to you before about operating a balanced pub portfolio across community pubs, food-led pubs, premium pubs and bars and rooms, and really focusing on over time continuing to work away at improving the quality of the estate. The overall group strategy of focusing on debt reduction and cash flow remains on track. So we've set out targets for you before in terms of what we're trying to get to by 2023, and certainly prior to COVID-19, we were on track in terms of delivering against those targets. So we've had good progress on that score. What we will do at some point in the later summer, hopefully when the pubs are reopened again, is to have a day when we talk through, a capital markets day, where we talk through in more detail what we are doing in terms of our more detailed pub strategy. So just to come back to the transaction itself on page 16 and the timetable and the next steps, we are expecting a shareholder vote in June. Our interim results will also be in June, and expected completion of the transaction will be in quarter three of the calendar year. That's our expectation. So to summarise, the partnership creates a brewer of significantly increased scale, very significant opportunities for value creation and synergies. We crystallise value of what we have regarded as an asset which has been undervalued, but we've retained significant exposure to the benefits of a joint venture, and in particular those synergies. The cash equalisation payment of up to $273 million materially reduces our debt outside the securitisation and increases our financial flexibility, and operationally provides us with an increased focus on operating a very attractive pub and accommodation business. So thank you for listening to that presentation. We'd like to turn the meeting over to questions at this point. Sabina, would you just come in and explain again, please, how that works for the avoidance of doubt?
Thank you. So ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel this request, you can press the hash key. But once again, it is star one in order to ask a question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Sabina. I'm going to start, please, with a question from Tim Barrett of Numis. Do we have Tim Barrett of Numis?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Tim.
Perfect. Around the structure, the first question, I guess the basic question, why 60%? What were you trying to solve for there? Did you look at taking more cash and keeping a lower ongoing stake? And then a second kind of related question. I know it's hard to say now where the RCF stands, but in September, if you take the cash pro forma, you're down at about $57 million, I think. Just can you talk around what the right level is for the RCF in the new world? Thanks very much.
Okay, Tim. I will talk to the first part of that question, which was essentially, did we look at slightly different shareholder percentages and more cash? And obviously, we did look at a range of options. And the things that we were trying to solve for, as you describe it, were the amount of cash that we would receive through the equalization payment versus the exposure and upside offered by what we think is an incredibly exciting business plan. And having 40% of that in future is we think, you know, going to lead to significant shareholder value creation. So those were the things that we were looking to solve for. I think the other point that I would make is that it was always clear to us that Carlsberg wanted a genuine joint venture partner. They didn't just want, you know, a sleeping partner with a very minority stake. So the stake that Martin's PLC would have as the JV partner would have to be meaningful. And at 40%, we think we struck the right balance between taking cash out of the business, having exposure to future upside, and having a genuine partnership arrangement with Carlsberg.
Yeah, and on the RCF, Tim, I think if you take that year-end basis, you clearly get to a number. What we're all aware of is that COVID is clearly putting pressure on the drawdown on that RCF. I think for me the key point is we've got flexibility. It gives us increasing ability to ride the challenges of COVID. Our objective of achieving a debt target of 1.2 billion, I think, still remains, excluding the impact of this transaction. Clearly, the timing of when we get to that number will be impacted by the length and extent of the COVID impact, but that remains unchanged. So I don't think we need to really talk about the right level of RCF. I think the original target of getting debt down to around 1.2 billion, excluding this, remains intact.
Okay, thanks. Can I just sneak one more in? You talked about the interesting multiple differential in your favour. Can I just ask what was going on in the Carlsberg UK business over a number of years with sales going backwards? Was that something very specific to the brand?
Yeah, Carlsberg had, for obvious reasons, has been exposed almost completely to the standard lager market in UK. And that market, as I've described many times, has been over the last decade the most difficult and competitive segment of the market. One of the things that we have been impressed by, having said that, has been the rebranding of the Carlsberg brand in the UK and the initial signs and feedback that has come out from that rebranding. So I think what we see is a business that has been operating in a very competitive part of the market, but which is in the process of giving itself an edge in terms of recapturing both growth and market share in the UK market.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Can we move to Doug Jack, please?
Yeah, good afternoon. I've got three quick questions, if that's okay. Just first of all, Andrew, can you just remind us how much book value there is for the pub assets that are sitting outside the securitization at present? That was the first one.
About £2 billion, Doug.
I'm sorry, Andrew?
About £2 billion.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of the second question, what's the sort of, well, not the terms, but in terms of the agreement, or supply with this JV into the Marsden's estate, is it going to be like locking in for 5 years? Because usually, you know, you fix terms for quite a long time when this sort of transaction happens. Can you say anything on that?
Yes, to be clear on that, it will be a long-term supply agreement, which you'd expect. It does not contain a volume commitment, and nor does it prohibit sourcing brands from other brewers across the UK. So it's a combination of those three things.
Yeah, that's a really important, Doug, really important point, Doug. So it's a minimum distribution obligation rather than a minimum volume obligation.
Yeah.
And very importantly, the terms of supply are identical to those of the relationship between Marston's Beer Company and the pub business historically, so it's an arm's length third-party basis.
That is the other key point. It's a commercial arm's length basis, yeah.
Yeah.
That's absolutely perfect. Thank you very much. And just the last thing, obviously we're looking at the portfolio what you have in terms of lager into your current state and what Carlsberg can offer. Putting the two together and obviously the size of your bars, I mean, how much revenue potential do you see there being from this JV now, obviously having a substantial public state national supply?
I don't really want to go into numbers on what that might look like, but in terms of the attractiveness of brands within the Carlsberg overall portfolio and our business, I think there is more opportunity from brands such as San Miguel, Peretti, Mahu, Brooklyn. We think there are some really good opportunities in there, which will drive growth for the joint venture.
And if I could add to Ralph's comments there, very importantly, when we look at the revenue synergies, yeah, there's some benefit from the, you know, the supply into the pub estate, but the majority of revenue growth is coming from external increased distribution across all trade channels, potentially exploiting export and improved product mix. So just as the strategy with Marston's Beer Company was to, you know, to effectively be a beer business in its own right and not reliant on the pub business, the strategy of the JV and the growth very much mirrors that historical strategy of Marston's Beer Company.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much, Doug. Anna Barnfather.
From me as well. Firstly, you've talked about the synergies within the joint venture and given us the sort of one-off costs. Will there be any sort of long-term reduction in central costs as a result of this development? That's the first question. The second question, I just wondered if you could give us a bit of background on how long discussions have been going on, if you can, and how they kind of shifted in light of COVID. And then the third question relating to one that's been asked already, just in terms of how significant Carlsberg is to the existing revenues of the Marston's estate, if you can answer those, please.
Yeah, I will do. On synergies, yes, there will be long-term reductions in central overheads, so that is part and parcel of the cost savings that will accrue. In terms of background to how long the conversations have been going on and how they shifted through the recent crisis, we started discussions with Carlsberg towards the end of 2019, and we had made progress by the time that all of this current crisis struck. What I would say about that is, firstly, we didn't change overall valuation expectations across that time. So we started out with a similar multiple to the multiple that we've achieved. But you can see that the one thing that was influenced by the crisis, which seems to me to be absolutely the right kind of adjustment to make, was the deferred contingent payment. And what we did with that was to take a percentage of the overall cash sum, and we looked at that and said, you know, clearly the UK on-trade, which is an important part of the mix of the joint venture and both businesses at the moment, is in lockdown, but over the next 12 months, what recovery might we expect and target from that, and that's where the contingent deferred payment comes from. So those are the changes that we put in place. In terms of how significant Carlsberg UK is within the Marston's Group, it is already a major supplier of ours. So it was a major supplier before and is now. I think looking at the Carlsberg Marston's business, it does have opportunities to grow within the Marston's business, but it has, in scale terms, probably bigger opportunities to grow outside of the Marston's pub business.
To clarify one point, on the synergies, the 24 million is the synergies within the JV. Did I hear you correctly that there will be sort of cost synergies outside of it within?
I wasn't referring to that. I was talking purely about overhead synergies within the JV, to be clear.
We clearly have a much simpler business, Anna. I think the biggest synergy from this transaction for the retained co left over, the pub business, is that clearly all of Ralph and my attention will now be on a pub business and nothing more. And I think that increased focus on that pub business will ensure that we can get an even better result.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much. And a question from Christian Crosby of JP Morgan.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking the question. So, congratulations on getting the deal done. Obviously, pretty opportune time to have a lot of cash coming in. Your presentation and the securitization release were pretty clear that no immediate impact on the securitization. But I was curious, with this cash coming in, do you think that it makes sense to possibly buy some pubs out of the securitization structure and transfer into the holdco? Something that some of your peers have done. And then secondly from that, you mentioned the consent that expires next week. Any update on the progress towards your threshold there aside from the initial announcement?
No. Yeah. Okay,
I think all I've got to say about that is that the issues to do with securitization we will discuss with the securitization bondholders, and we've updated the market to the extent we think appropriate at this point in time, so I've probably got nothing else to add to that right now on the securitization front.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as I stated, Christian, in the presentation, these proceeds will pay down the RCF that is currently drawn down, and clearly with the additional facility we've secured, COVID is clearly a cash outflowing scenario at this point in time. I think in the first instance, it has to really be about reducing the RCF.
Yeah. That is the plan. Next question from Owen Shirley of Berenberg, please.
Afternoon, guys. A couple of my questions got asked, so just two, if that's okay from me. The first was just to confirm, I think you partly covered this in the presentation, but that will this change how you think about the existing business at all? Like, will you loosen the belt, so to speak, on investing in the current estate, or is it still absolutely that 200 million debt reduction target remains in place over the same time frame?
Yeah.
And then the second was just a straightforward one. Just if you could, again, you touched on it, but confirm how the contingent part works. Is it as simple as the better that composite of shares performs, the more of the contingent part you'll get? And if you could give any kind of colour on at what point you would get the full 34 million, that would also be very helpful.
Okay, I'll ask Andrew to answer the first part if I deal with the second part. The way the contingent payment works is that, first of all, it's 12 months from completion of the joint venture that will be paid. And secondly, it's based on the performance of those stocks that I referred to in the basket, measuring their progress from a pre-COVID share price to that point 12 months out.
Yeah.
So it's very, very, very simple, in other words.
Yeah. With regard to the existing business, I think, just to be clear, there is no planned sort of resumption of new builds. We've got to maintain a very tight and disciplined approach to allocating capital within the core estate. So the 200 million reduction continues to be a focus going forward. So I don't think there's any sort of plan to suddenly unleash a lot of capital back into the pub estate inappropriately. We've got to maintain really strong capital disciplines in this market.
Thanks. Apologies to labour the point, if I could ask just one follow-up on the contingent. Are you able to give any colour on over that time frame? Are we looking at the 34 million being unlocked if they do sort of 10%, or is it 100%?
I didn't know that clear. It's a very good point. There's a sliding scale. So the percentage will depend upon its performance from a rate of where it was pre-COVID where it was on announcement and how we recover back to that point.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So it's not binary. It's not a puzzle line.
No.
Yeah.
And it's pre-COVID to sort of recover level, basically.
Indeed.
Got it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you very much. Julian Iso, please.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Just a few follow-ups from me as well. In terms of your business was unique because of the view you owned your own distribution and run that, whereas I guess Carlsberg has got probably a different distribution system. Given the success of Marston's, will it be actually the Marston's distribution system that wins out in that battle of the two different different parts?
I've got
another couple of questions. You've got 196 million of net assets and a 580 million value. Can you just confirm that you structured it in a way to avoid tax, capital gains tax? And lastly, I guess some of the pensioners came from the brewers. Do you get rid of any of the pension scheme, or does that stay within Marston's? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. To answer those, I'm going to ask Andrew to answer the tax point and the pension point. In terms of this distribution, what I will say is that one of the things that Carlsberg are very interested in is how our distribution works, because it is a point of difference in the market. And it's made a difference to our performance in that sector. What the joint venture actually does in the future, I think it will be down to the joint venture. So I don't think at the moment I could confirm to you that they will go necessarily one way or the other, or indeed have some kind of mix of the two. But I do know that has been one of the features that they have found attractive about our beer business.
You're right, Julian. The tax brains are the greater brains than I on things. Tax have effectively structured the deal such that we shouldn't see a significant tax liability arising from this. And in addition to that, the group has capital losses that it can utilise. And I'll stop there. So no, there shouldn't be any issue on that front. The pension scheme the final salary scheme has been closed to future accrual for the best part of 20 years or so. So we will continue to hold the responsibility for the defined benefit scheme going forward.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Paul Ruddy from Goodbody, please.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Just two quick ones. First one is just how capacity will look versus utilisation in the joint venture. The potential then for consolidation of assets if there is excess capacity. And the second one is just the Carlsberg margin. Would you mind just running through really quickly kind of the drivers of that margin being lower than your own? I know your own business is quite profitable, but is it, the channel exposure to the off-trade, or is it just the point you made earlier about the mainstream beer being a little bit more competitive? And then maybe, just with reference to that, is there the opportunity to kind of structurally shift the margin upwards unless the Carlsberg business by, utilising, say, some of the different channels that you use in Marston?
Okay. Andrew, do you want to comment on the capacity point?
Yeah, I think the key point here, Paul, is the team are focused on growing the business, and just as with Marston's Beer Company, you're constantly looking at trying to max it or fill the breweries, as it were. So the plan is very much to grow to fill that capacity over time. But the disciplines and given the Marston's management team have got a lot of experience in running the business efficiently, you allude to margins. That's something that's constantly under review. But there are no firm commitments as such.
Yeah, that's correct. And on the margin point, I think just in summary, I think two things about our relatively high margin. One is the strategy, which is has been for a number of years a focus on regional, local, and beers of taste, and provenance, brewing beer in different places like Hampshire or Oxfordshire or wherever it is. And you know, we've long argued that although there may be some modest increase in cost from doing that, you are able to recover that through sales price, because what we found consistently over the years is that consumers will pay more for regional and local beers. So that's a big part of it. And the second part has been a focus on premium beers. So that has helped us to increase our margin both in the on and the off trade. I think within the Carlsberg existing business, their relatively lower margin is due to their exposure in the off-trade standard lager market in particular. But do I think there are opportunities for that business to improve margins in future? Yes, I do. Not just by leveraging the two things that I've just talked about, the regional strategy and local and regional beers, but also by this rebranding that I talked about of Carlsberg in the UK market, which is a big development for them in the last over the last year or so. So the positioning of that brand in both the UK and the on-trade is something that's very much at the forefront of thinking in terms of how that develops in future. Okay. Thank you very much. Ted Nyhan from JP Morgan.
Thanks, guys. Most of my questions have been answered, but just two small ones, and it's probably a bit early for you to be drawn on this at all, but are you committed for the long-term holding this 40%, or can you envisage down the line, under the right circumstances, exiting completely? Kind of relatedly, will the JV still be open for further deals, further consolidation in the sector, and what would that require from your perspective? And then just sort of housekeeping thing, presumably this won't be consolidated going forward. What's the accounting treatment there? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, on the are we committed to the long term, or are we planning an exit at some point down the line? We are committed to the long term. This is intended to be a partnership, and as I say, we are very excited to be able to participate in what we see as the benefits of the joint venture, including the access to synergies and so on. In terms of exit, I made the point right at the beginning or early on in this presentation that the detailed terms do assume normal exit arrangements in certain circumstances, but our view of this is a long-term partnership. Will it be open to further consolidation? I think clearly that will depend on how the market develops and how the partnership views these things over time. My view of it is probably yes, because as I've said before, I think there will be further consolidation in the UK beer market. You've just got to look at the return on capital characteristics overall to think that one way or another there will be further capacity changes and ownership changes. So I would expect that to be of significant interest to Carlsberg Martins in future. So that's what I would say about that.
On the accounting, Ted, we will record this as our share of the profit after tax of the joint venture. So it'll be a single line entry, and that will be That will be a statutory profit after tax number, hence the fact that in year one this won't be accretive because we do need to reflect the exceptional costs within that. Clearly going forward, as those exceptionals drop off, those earnings come back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much. And we have one final question, I think, from Tristan Van Strick from Redburn. Hello, Tristan, are you there?
Off mute would help. There we go. Just three for me. Just the first one, are there any break clauses or change of control clauses of any of your brand portfolio at the moment? I'm thinking of brands like Estrella Damm, who obviously see Carlsberg especially the export version, as a competitor. The second question, did or will Carlsberg have any interest in your pub estate? Is that a possibility going forward that the joint venture may expand to start including your pub estate? And I guess the third one, I wasn't quite clear. You know, obviously Carlsberg's been expanding their craft and specialty portfolio internationally. Can any of these brands be taken into Europe, especially when I look at Thomas Blauvelt's history? He's launched a few ills in his career in continental Europe. So I was wondering if there's any possibility around that and how that will be treated.
Okay, thank you for that, Tristan. On the last point, can the brands be taken into Europe? The answer to that is yes, and I think that is something of particular interest. We, in terms of the Marston Spear business in 2019, approximately 10% of the volume that was brewed went to export. So we already did, we already have a successful export operation. And I think the access to the global network of Carlsberg will enhance that. So I think that's a positive. I think in terms of did they have an interest in the pub estate, I think, you know, Carlsberg were very clear to us that they are a brewer and that is where their expertise lies. And therefore, one of the attractions to them of this partnership was to be able to get closer to a pub business without, from their perspective, risks of ownership of something that isn't in their fundamental area of expertise. In terms of licensed brands, within licensed brand portfolios, there are always changes of licensed portfolios. That is sort of the nature of it. My view of this is that brand owners will regard the Marston's Carlsberg business as a very attractive route to market because it has got increased scale and reach for their brands. So I think the reception generally for the joint venture will be very positive.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think that is concludes all the questions that we're aware of. So thank you for taking part in the call and have a good bank holiday weekend. Thank you.
Thank you very much, all. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Thank you.